The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Cindy Fowler from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Dave's Garden e-newsletter, the National Gardening Association e-newsletter, the Triangle Gardener magazine, and maybe from Tips for the Lazy Gardener by Linda Tilgner. We'll start with Dave's Garden e-newsletter. The glory of gardening, hands in the dirt, head in the sun, heart with nature. To nurture a garden is to feed not just the body, but the soul. And that was said by Alfred Austin. The Cornucopia, Symbol of the Harvest by Gwen Bruno. The cornucopia, a horn brimming over with fruits of the harvest, is a symbol of abundance indelibly linked, at least in American minds, with Thanksgiving. It is far more ancient than the pilgrims, however, and dates back to the 5th century B.C. Also called a horn of plenty, it is by tradition made of a goat's horn filled to overflowing with fruits, flowers, and grains of the harvest. It symbolizes prosperity, abundance, and good fortune. The name comes from the Greek, cornu, meaning horn, and copia, meaning abundance or plenty, thus literally horn of plenty. In Greek mythology, one version of the origin of the cornucopia begins with Zeus, who, as a young child, was suckled by a she-goat named Amalthea. When he accidentally broke off one of her horns, he gratefully returned it, first endowing it with the ability to be filled with whatever the holder desired. Zeus later placed Amalthea in the sky, where she became the constellation of Capricorn, the goat. Another version has Hercules fighting a bull in one of his 12 labors. After tearing off a horn, he gave it to the naiads, who filled it with flowers. It was later acquired by Copia, the goddess of plenty. The cornucopia is frequently depicted in classical art. The never-empty horn of plenty was associated not only with Zeus and Hercules, but with other mythological deities, especially Teach, the goddess of good fortune and prosperity. If the horn was facing upward, it symbolized Dionysus, the god of wine and festivity, and Demeter, the goddess of the earth, agriculture, and fertility. David Hendon, in an article in the Journal of Ancient Numismatics, says that the cornucopia was a very popular religious symbol in the ancient world. It can be found stamped on Jewish coins beginning in the Maccabean era, and can also be found on objects like seals and rings and in architecture. This was during a period of Hellenistic influence, when many civilizations were influenced by the culture of the Greek. In the Jewish world, where animal horns were used to anoint kings and for religious musical instruments, the cornucopia took on an added significance. In traditional European cultures, communities celebrated the completion of the harvest by creating a corn dolly or corn maiden made of straw. These dollies were intended to ensure fertility and prosperity in the year to come and took many shapes. One of the earliest forms used was that of the horn or cornucopia. Precisely where when the horn of plenty made its way into our national consciousness as a Thanksgiving holiday emblem is hard to say, but with its message of abundance and good fortune, the cornucopia is now a symbol of Americans' sentiments of thankfulness each November. Cornucopias have become traditional autumn centerpieces and usually feature not a horn, but a basket woven into a conical shape. Modern-day fillings might be leaves, dried or fresh flowers, cattails, nuts, and of course, fruits, and vegetables such as grapes or miniature gourds and pumpkins. Whether it goes by the name cornucopia or horn of plenty, the meaning of this ancient symbol still resonates today. The reverence people feel for the fruit and plenty of the earth remains unchanged throughout the centuries. And now, from the National Gardening Association e-newsletter. A man does not plant a tree for himself. He plants it for posterity. Alexander Smith said that. Time to Make Compost by Charlie Nardozzi. The leaves have dropped from the trees, the summer vegetable and flower gardens are finished, and Mother Nature is providing an abundance of organic matter for you to make into compost. Even if you live in an area where you've planted fall gardens for a winter and early spring harvest, it's still time to make compost. It's one of those feel-good fall activities. You feel good about cleaning up the yard and making something valuable for your garden. For free! Compost helps sandy soil retain water, clay soil drain better, makes nutrients more available to plants, and supports soil microbial activity that defends your plants against disease. Starting a compost pile is easy as following a cooking recipe. Get the right ingredients together, mix them well, and let it cook. In a matter of months, you'll have black gold to mix into the soil of your flower, herb, and vegetable gardens. Compost is decomposed or well-watered, rotted organic material. Can be made from a variety of materials such as vegetable waste, leaves, grass clippings, and animal manures. Making compost is simple. Think of it as making lasagna. Alternate layers of brown ingredients and green ingredients, adding water between each layer. Then let it cook until done. Brown plant materials, such as leaves, old grass clippings, shredded paper, peat moss, hay, and straw. Green plant materials are such as fresh grass clippings, vegetable kitchen waste, including coffee grounds and eggshells, yard waste, weeds and small twigs, disease-free vegetable plants, cow, horse, or chicken manure. If you're low on the green, you can also use high-nitrogen organic fertilizers like blood meal and cottonseed meal. Avoid the following materials. These should be kept out of compost: meat and bones, large amounts of wood chips or sawdust, pet manure, herbicide-treated grass clippings, perennial and seed-bearing weeds, diseased plants, and anything metallic or plastic. To get started, find a place for your compost pile convenient to your kitchen or garden, and that has well-drained soil. In warm summer areas, locate the pile in shade so it won't dry out too quickly. Not required, but a wire, wood, or plastic container keeps your compost pile looking neat and helps prevent animals from scattering food scraps. Lay a sheet of galvanized wire hardware cloth under an open-bottomed container to prevent rodents from burrowing into the pile. You can make a compost bin from materials as simple as heavy-duty wire caging, wooden pallets nailed together, or old lumber formed into three walls with a removable fourth front wall. Make sure the bin is at least 3 feet square, comes apart or opens easily, and allows plenty of airflow in the pile. Commercial composters can be more attractive and make composting neater. Compost tumblers are barrel-shaped drums on pedestals. They generally don't hold as much organic matter as bin type, but are easy to turn and make compost more quickly. Once you have your container, remember a simple composting principle. Everything decomposes. It's up to you to decide how quickly you want it to happen, the compost to happen. If you made a pile of vegetable debris and just left it, it would eventually decompose. The beauty of constructing a pile properly and making sure it has the proper amounts of air and water is you can make higher quality compost more quickly. Here are simple steps. Add a brown layer. Lay a 4 to 6 inch thick layer of brown material on bottom. Shred the materials before adding them to quicken the decomposition process. Moisten the layer. Dampen the bottom layer so it's moist but not soggy. That will help accelerate the decomposition process. Add a green layer. A 2 to 4 inch thick layer of nitrogen-rich green materials. If you wish, add a compost enhancer or fertilizer to help jumpstart the pile. Make more layers. Alternate layers of brown and green material until the pile is 3 to 5 feet high or the container is full. Moisten each layer before adding the next. Cover the bin. Seal the commercial bin or cover the homemade bin with a lid or tarp to prevent animals from getting inside and keep rain from making the pile too wet. As the material decomposes, the center of the pile will heat. But the heating does not extend throughout the pile. To ensure all materials break down, mix the pile. After the center heats up and then cools down, turn the pile. Use a garden fork, composting tool, or shovel to mix the contents, blending the inside and outside materials. Moisten the pile again after mixing. Repeat turning the pile once or twice. The compost is ready to use when it's dark and crumbly, usually in a month or two. Incorporate a 1 to 2 inch thick layer of finished compost into vegetable and annual flower beds 2 weeks before planting. On poor soil, add a 2 to 3 inch thick layer. Now from the Triangle Gardener magazine. This is by Gina Myers. Answers to common gardening questions. We get all kinds of wild horticultural questions in our North Carolina Extension office. As we approach the end of the year, we thought it would be interesting to glean our hefty phone logs, along with gardener feedback, to come up with a countdown of the 10 most asked gardening questions in 2018. Number 10. What is this slimy mess on my mulch? It could be dog vomit slime mold, which is not a mold at all, or one of its plasmodial siblings. These are fascinating, although a bit gross. Growths that show up on mulch after heavy rains. Simply leave them as they will dry up eventually. If you must have a tidy area, you can scoop them up in a bag and put it in the trash. These spores are everywhere, but only grow when conditions are just right. So don't worry that these harmless messes will take over your world. 9. What's wrong with my Leyland cypress and how can I cure it? Usually, people tearfully add that they just can't lose the hedge because it's so beautiful and important in their landscape. Unfortunately, this evergreen grows like gangbusters for 15 to 25 years, and at its peak, it fails due to several different diseases. Don't plant it. Plant more diverse hedges instead of just one type of shrub or tree. For ideas on alternatives to Leyland cypress, see the stories Great Evergreens for Screens and Hedges or Substitution Plants. Try these trouble-free options on www.trianglegardener.com. Number 8. How do I get rid of these bees in my lawn? Or worse, these carpenter bees are destroying my home. Help! Bees have a bad rap, which I usually save for yellow jackets and other wasps. Ground bees, or solitary bees, nest by themselves, often in bare patches of the lawn. They are active but non-aggressive for a couple of weeks in late spring, then disappear till next year. No worries. Carpenter bees can do some mild damage to wood structures, but treatment is limited and can involve hitting the individual holes with spray. 7. I just can't get grass to grow. What's wrong? First question is, what kind of grass? Second is, are there trees? And third, is the drainage poor? Bermuda grass won't tolerate shade, and even shade-tolerant grasses need 4 or more hours of sun per day, or 50% open tree canopy. When people add that there is moss growing there, we have the hard talk about shade and moisture. Consider creating a lovely woodland garden instead. Number 6. My trees looked sick, so I fed it, but it still looks sick. What can I do? Fertilizing stressed trees is never a good idea. Figure out what's causing the stress and correct it if possible. Is there too much, too little sun, or water problems? Is mulch piled on more than 2 to 4 inches? Is there an insect infestation? You should soil test, prune out dead areas, lightly compost, treat for insects if needed, and if it still doesn't thrive, remove the tree. Chemical treatments won't provide a miracle cure. Seek out the help of a certified arborist near you. Number 5. My tomato plants are yellowing, spotty, wilting, have end rot. What do I do? Sigh. Growing tomatoes in the South is a battle of wills with Mother Nature, as our high heat and humidity breed disease pressure. Select disease-resistant varieties. Rotate where you plant them in the garden every year. Soil test. Prepare the soil. Mulch 1 to 3 inches. Prune off diseased stems. Water and fertilize if needed. Yank sick plants out. Number 4. These moles and voles are tearing up my yard. How do I get rid of them? Moles eat insects. They love grubs and are avid tunnelers you see running through your lawn. Voles eat plant material. They love roots, are weak tunnelers, and may use mole tunnels or move through shallow area in the mulch. Voles can do a number on bulbs and any woody plants. If you live near woods, you will have a hard time getting rid of both, unless you have an outdoor cat. For more non-lethal and lethal control measures, check the internet. Number 3. Are these caterpillars going to kill my trees? In general, spring caterpillars, like the tent caterpillar, can have more impact on a tree than the fall foliage eaters. If a tree is defoliated in the spring, it must use energy to create more leaves, and when repeated, can cause loss of vigor. In the fall, the trees have already stored their energy for winter, so losing their leaves is not a problem. This is the same with spring leaf spots and diseases versus those in the fall. Number 2. When do I plant, fertilize, treat my lawn? People love their lawns. I mow whatever is green, but if you want a uniform, thick lawn, get to know the Turf Files website at NC State University. It has maintenance calendars for all the warm and cool season turfs, weed and disease identification tools, and control options. Lawn and lawn alternatives are listed at chatham.ces.ncsu.edu www.cornucopia.org/extensiongardenerclass3. Drum roll, please. Coming in at the number one question this year is, why and how do I soil test? Soil is quite literally at the root of plant life. So, knowing whether you need to add lime or fertilizer is key to plant health. A pH range of 6.0 to 6.5 is ideal for most plants in the South, so adding lime each year without testing can be overkill. Vegetable gardeners are the worst for over-fertilizing. The NC Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services provides an excellent and free soil testing service, free from April through November, $4 from December through March, for its citizens. For more information, call your local Master Gardener volunteers. For other gardening questions, you can call the Wake County Master Gardener Volunteers at 919-250-1084, 919-250-1084, or the Master Gardeners where you live. And now some upcoming events. Wreath Making Workshop, November the 28th, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Make a festive, natural wreath using plants from the garden. Materials and tools are provided. This workshop is for teens and adults. There is a fee, and you need to pre-register. This happens at the Cape Fear Botanical Garden in Fayetteville. Lunchbox Talk. Insect Adaptations to Life Underwater, November 29, 12 noon. Learn about how insects have adapted their bodies to meet their survival needs in freshwater systems, how insects breathe and move underwater, avoid being swept away, and deal with drought. It's free, but pre-registration is required. Call 919-962-0522, 919-962-0522. This happens at the North Carolina Botanical Garden in Chapel Hill. Pecan Day, November the 30th. Enjoy a free pecan dessert and pick up locally grown pecans for holiday celebrations. This happens at the State Farmers Market in Raleigh. And Wine and Wreaths, November the 30th or December the 1st, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., our wreath workshop is the perfect start for the holiday season. Enjoy hors d'oeuvres, wine, and other beverages as you make a wreath. This workshop will provide instruction and materials needed to make a wreath of your own. Participants are encouraged to bring items for your wreath that showcase your personal style. Each participant is required to bring garden shears. There is a fee, and you need to pre-register. And this will happen at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum at North Carolina State University in Raleigh. Call 919-515-3132, 919-515-3132 for more information. And now from Tips for the Lazy Gardener by Linda Tilgner. I laugh when I think of our first garden, says Deidre Kevorkian. Spindly was the word for those plants. The garden was three times as big as this one, but we got much less produce. Now she and Eric have raised beds in a modest 12-foot by 20-foot garden, framed with jaunty orange marigolds, just inside pressure-treated 6x6 timbers. In their small patch, they mulch with grass clippings. Every time they mow, they add some more. They use an organic 5-10-5 for supplemental feeding. The carrots, beets, spinach, lettuce, beans, broccoli, Tomatoes, peppers, cukes, and winter squash are healthy and bug-free. I have not weeded yet this year, Deirdre boasts. It's almost automatic. Plant, mulch, and wait. I love gardens, but I hate the work. Weed haters are alert for non-commercial sources of mulch. I was jogging through a development one autumn, and I met a man raking pine needles, explains a New Hampshire woman. We began talking, and soon I had a promise of an annual supply of pine needles for my acid-loving plants, such as blueberries, and I also talked him into organizing his neighbors to save leaves for me. Of course, I offered inducements. Every summer, I give each of them a supply of plastic bags to use for collecting my mulch in the fall. And at Christmas, I thank them with candy. Each autumn, I cart away in my utility trailer 22 bags of pine needles and 44 bags of leaves. They love me. Hay is a wonderful mulch for vegetables. Bales of hay separate easily into leaves, slices which can be laid out on soil between rows. Don't worry about the weed seeds that sprout from the hay itself. Simply lay more hay on top or roll it over. Hay transforms soil into black, fluffy loam. Mulching materials. Be imaginative in collecting mulching materials. Buy if you must, or scavenge from friends or local industries. Try hay. A farmer might be delighted to unload spoiled bales. Straw, leaves, shred or rotary mow first. Hulls or shells from cocoa beans, buckwheat, peanuts, rice, cottonseed, oats, or nuts. Grass clippings. Wood chips. Get them from a utility company pruning near overhead wires. Shredded bark. Sawdust. Seaweed. Kelp. Eelgrass. Ground corn cobs and stalks. Shredded sugar cane. Packing materials, Excelsior, shredded paper. Salt hay. Coffee grounds. Partly finished compost. Pebbles. Ground oyster shells. Newspaper. Peat moss. Spanish moss. And tobacco stems. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.